matchingfund@wbai.org, and we will make it easy for you to nominate WBAI. If WBAI is listed, please send your employer's match form for your premium gift donation directly to matchingfund@wbai. And please check our website under Donate for details. A WBAI listener summed up the match this way. She says, "What's so beautiful about employer matching gifts for premium gift donations is that it's workers' money that's already there. We just need to get it to WBAI.
The time now is 3 p.m. Stay tuned for Black Star News with Milton Alamadi. This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, and WBAI.org online.
Sisters and brothers, welcome to Black Star News Show on WBAI New York 99.5 FM radio. I'm your host, Milton Alamadi. Today, we are going to be looking at the incoming U.S. administration under President Joe Biden. What kind of Africa policy will the U.S. pursue? We're going to be talking with, hopefully, three guests. We've been managing so far to get in touch with two of these guests. We have with us today Dr. Naka Lagoke. He's Assistant Professor of History and Pan-African Studies at Lincoln University in Pennsylvania. And Pan-Africanists should be familiar with that name. That is the alma mater of Kwame Nkrumah, who went to Lincoln in the 1930s. Dr. Lagoke is also the founding member of Convention Pan-Africanism and Progress, CPP. And then we have with us from Harare, Zimbabwe, Sifelani Siko. He is a columnist for Black Star News. He's Zimbabwe-based and a veteran reporter. We will be discussing with these two the new incoming administration in terms of U.S.-Africa relations, and hopefully we may also be joined by Kambale Musavuli, a Pan-African activist based in Accra, Ghana. So why don't we get started, gentlemen? First of all, let's come to you, Dr. Lagoke. How are you?
So thank you, Milton, for the opportunity. I am great. And then I am excited to have this conversation with you and the other guest.
Excellent. So why don't I ask you, first of all, give me a brief comment on the messy transition going on in Washington.
Oh, yes. That is something that everyone could anticipate, because Donald J. Trump is a character, and then he has told, even before the election, everyone, that he was not going to concede, or that he was thinking that people were going to do some frauds, and then therefore he was going to be justified that in order to contest the results of the election. But it looks like that this election is different from.
Yes, Naka, try to speak into the microphone, because occasionally I lost you for a second there.
So it's not my microphone. I keep receiving calls.
Sorry. Yes. Please continue.
Yeah, the internet was not working on my computer, and then I have it on the cell. That's why people keep calling. So yes, I'm saying that that's something that everyone could expect coming from Donald J. Trump. We're not going to see what happens in some African countries. Eventually, he's going to leave power, and then on January 20th, 2021, Joe Biden, who was duly elected president of the United States, will be sworn in, and then America is going to start like a new chapter of its history.
Okay, so while I still have you, let me ask you then, in terms of what you know of U.S. history, U.S. engagement with Africa, U.S.-Africa policy, what do you anticipate from this administration?
It's going to be, I don't see anything new. America, even though it is seen as the land of the free, America, when it comes to foreign policy, most of the presidents, be Republicans or Democrats, all of them, they follow that imperialistic agenda on when it comes to foreign policy. And because of the, what is happening in Africa with the rise of China and then Russia that is claiming its right as a global power, and then most of the powers are fighting, so America is going to be more forceful in Africa. And then so therefore we may go back to what Barack Obama was doing and then what some other American presidents were doing. Even though Donald Trump was seen, and then of course it is true that he was supported by many racist groups in the United States because he's anti-system, being the United States, anti-system on the international system, anti-system when it comes to its relationship with the intelligence community in the United States, and when it comes to its relationship with the deep state, somehow there was a kind of disengagement from the United States in Africa. Well, with Joe Biden, we will see like a more forceful engagement of the United States in Africa, and you know, for the interests of the United States, not for the interests of the African people.
Okay, so that's interesting. You point out Donald Trump's disengagement. So are you suggesting that, in fact, because of this disengagement, he was somehow less destructive in Africa when compared with past administrations?
Yes. And then that's one that I really appreciate you, Milton, for this conversation. And then I've not heard, like on many talk shows, many Africans talking about that kind of, having that kind of conversation. Yes, it was destructive. It was less destructive. That's why when he was competing against Hillary Clinton, there were many Africans who did not want Hillary Clinton to become the president of the United States because of what she did in Libya and in Ivory Coast and in many other parts of the world. And then that's the same thing. I've seen people, they are not Americans. Some of them are Americans. And they say that they would prefer Donald J. Trump, even though they know that Donald Trump is supported by many racist groups, and then he has not shown compassion, you know, for blacks who have been killed, you know, by police brutality in the United States. But yeah, some people say that when Joe Biden comes to power, it's going to be the same old thing that Obama was doing, that Hillary Clinton was doing. And that's why some people like me, I did not want Susan Rice, you know, to be the Secretary of State because of the role she played in Libya and in Ivory Coast. So yes, in that sense, it was less destructive, you know, to Africa than Obama, than Hillary Clinton. And then, you know, we think that Joe Biden, if he does not change the course of the things, he may, you know, be more destructive than Donald Trump when it comes to the relationship between the United States and Africa.
Very interesting. Why don't we come to you, Sifelani Tsiko in Zimbabwe. First of all, let me ask you, when you observe the messy transition going on in the United States, as somebody based in Africa, having conversations with other Africans, intellectuals, journalists, and ordinary people, what is your assessment of this messy transition?
I guess greetings to you.
Thank you.
It's good to be part of the program. Firstly, Africa was following with interest the elections that were taking place in the U.S. There were quite a lot of points that Africa was very keen watching on the chaotic nature of the elections, something that we also see here in Africa. Also issues to do with complaints about voter rigging. So Africa was saying this can also happen in a developed country like US. Mm. So these are the issues that in terms of running the electoral processes, the democratic processes in America, this is what Africa was also keen about. And also, you could, from the streets, from what people were saying, you could also get the how they wanted Biden to win. Trump had actually was a cause for concern for them because of his utterances. Denigrating Africans. So there was a lot of interest and a lot of following up on the elections itself, and so many lessons in terms of running of elections that then America then come in and maybe try to play big brother when it comes to the running of elections in Africa. So these are some of the issues that because of the social media and modern communications processes, people were quite watching the developments in the U.S. electoral process real time. So you get this sense that they could easily relate to some extent with some of the challenges they see in their own electoral processes. Now the issue is then, what are the Americans going to be saying when it comes to the elections that take place in Africa? So quite a lot of interest. But I think the main issue now is what next with the Biden, the incoming Biden administration. So this is some of the issues that Africa, particularly here in Southern Africa. Southern Africa has been vocal in terms of the fact that the U.S. should lift sanctions over Zimbabwe. So these are some of the issues that how is the new administration going to be looking at issues to do with sanctions, issues to do with trade, issues to do with bilateral relations with both the region and individual countries in Southern Africa.
Okay, so before we get further into the whole issue of the sanctions, let me ask you, though, your own reaction in terms of what Dr. Lagoke said, that because of his disengagement with Africa, Donald Trump was actually less destructive in Africa when compared to previous administrations. And he gave one of the examples as the intervention in Libya, for example, which, of course, as you know, completely destroyed not only that country, but the entire region. What is your response to that?
I think hate him or like him, Trump brought numerous lessons for us as Africans that he really brought out white racism and where Africa stands. So we it was quite of a shock treatment to us as Africans that we need to be in charge of our destiny. We need to unite as Africans. So whilst there were negative vibes, but I think to some extent there was some empowering thoughts in terms of Pan-Africanism. That's when you saw people rallying together in attacking Trump in terms of his utterances. People were quite unanimous. So it brought a lot of Africanness in us that we need to be in charge of ourselves. We need to be re-looking at ourselves as Africans in terms of our future projections, the African Union call, African unity, that we need to revisit those concepts. The concept of Ubuntu, that we should be in charge of ourselves in terms of innovations, be it in the scientific side, that we need to take care of ourselves in terms of health. In terms of agriculture as well, that we need to grow what we eat as Africans.
Very good.
And,
okay, so
not rely more on aid.
Right.
So you find that much as we would hate what Trump used to say, if you look at it closely, it was a wake-up call to Africans that Trump is about America and America alone. And we as Africans, we need to also stand our own ground in terms of our social policies, health, education, scientific innovations, and looking at the agricultural sector, where we need to be looking at what can we do to grow our own food, to stand on our own. So that was the main message that I felt strongly, that most people had got a slumber that America was going to be a state, and racism was more like on, and things like that. So it was an awakening call that racism is still alive, and white supremacist attitudes are still alive. Sanctions on countries like Zimbabwe are still there. So the issue now is what do we do as Africans to overcome these challenges?
Okay, so we'll discuss a lot more of that in a second. Listeners, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to Black Star News Show on WBAI New York 99.5 FM radio. We're having a conversation with two eminent guests, Dr. Professor Lagoke, who is out of Lincoln University, and Sifelani Siko, who is with us from Harare in Zimbabwe. We're discussing the incoming administration and U.S.-Africa relations. Listener, I need to remind you that we can only bring you these type of unique programs with your support. This is commercial-free, listener-supported station, so I ask you to be generous. Please pick up the phone and dial 516-620-3602. Any contribution you make will be put to good use, or you can become a WBAI buddy. Adopt one of the programs or more, and I hope Black Star News is one of the programs that you adopt and become a buddy. You can do so by going to give, and then the number 2, WBAI.org, and the money is taken from your debit or credit card on a monthly basis. Now, back to our programming. Let me come back to you, Professor Lagoke. In terms of what Sifelani Siko said, that Donald Trump's lack of pretense and explicit racist conduct was actually a wake-up call for Africa at the same time. It allowed Africans to see that at the end of the day, as Donald Trump was for the U.S., Africans must also be for Africa. Can you pick up on that, please?
Oh, yes. We on this, even though I think Sifelani, that's his name, right?
Yes,
even though, I was a little bit curious to see, to hear his answer to the question that you asked me about the fact that how Donald Trump is seen as less destructive than Joe Biden. Yeah, because I have the feeling that maybe he did not want to answer the question because, of course, maybe the hope or the expect Joe Biden to lift the sanction against Zimbabwe. But the reality is that I agree with what he said. And this is also one of the positive aspects of Donald Trump presidency. Now, sometimes people think that America is in a post-racial era, particularly since the America elected Barack Obama, and then even Obama himself, people thought that, you know what, America is no longer that racist nation, and which is not true. Even though there are several generations in the United States, even during the time of slavery, by then, you know, people were like less than today. People throughout the history of the United States, many whites and blacks and many other races, they have fought, you know, for freedom and justice towards a more perfect union in the United States. We agree on that. But to believe that America has passed racism and white supremacy, it is a fallacy. So Donald Trump came to power and to show that the stigma of the Jim Crow laws, that segregation and then racism are deeply rooted in the United States in the 21st century. So that was a positive aspect of Donald Trump presidency. And then, like Sifalani said, and that is my position also, we want to seize the opportunity in the age of the COVID-19, which saw, you know, the collapse of the neoliberal worldview. We saw that how the Europeans could not even support each other, and then that it is important for Africans to stay woke, if I can use that expression, and then to come with new paradigms, and to come with new concepts, and then people like me, and then with my friends, that's why we are promoting a new dispensation of Pan-Africanism that stands upon the Ubuntu philosophy. As we saw the crisis of the socialist narrative with the fall of the Berlin Wall, the disintegration of the Soviet Union. Now it is time, when we see the crisis of the neoliberal worldview, it is time for Africans to propose something different. And then this is how Ubuntu can be that alternative worldview around which we can think about a new economic identity, not only for Africa, but the entire world. So in that sense, I agree with Sifalani. And that is, like people say, a blessing in disguise. That is something that we learn from Donald Trump presidency. But okay, so the reality is that, when I finished, the reality is that when we compare him when you talk about his foreign policy, because he believes that in the American disengagement, and because he's anti-system, Donald Trump has been less destructive to Africa compared to somebody like Obama, Hillary Clinton. So this is what I wanted to emphasize.
Okay, so on that note, we will now take a midpoint station break, and listeners will be back with our esteemed guest in a minute.
DJ Jogba,
My sisters and brothers, welcome back to the second half hour of Black Star News Show on WBAI New York 99.5 FM radio. I am your host, Milton Alimadi. Today, our guest, Dr. Naka Lagoke, a professor of history and Pan-African studies at Lincoln University. And our guest out of Harare, Zimbabwe, Sifelani Siko. He is a veteran journalist and a columnist for Black Star News Show. Listeners, as we get into the second half hour of the show, I need to remind you once again, we can only bring you these type of programming with your support. This is commercial free, listener supported radio. So I do remind you, do pick up the phone and dial 516-620-3602. Any contribution you make will be put to good use, or you can become a buddy. By doing so, you support a program of your choice, and I hope Black Star News Show is one of those shows. You can do so by going to give the number to WBAI.org. The money is taken out of your debit or credit card on a monthly basis. Now, back to our guest. Dr. Lagoke, I would like to stay with you for a minute. Tell us, at any point in the post-colonial history of Africa, has there been a time when U.S.-Africa relations was relatively promising? And when was that time?
Wow, that is a deep question. Okay. You say post-colonial. I am thinking about two very important moments and then that come to my, as I'm trying to think. That was before, during colonial time, when, yeah, like in the, around like in the World War, the World War, during World War One, and then during World War Two, and then we have the 14 points, during World War One, and then we have, the Atlantic Charter signed in 1941 by Churchill and then Roosevelt. And then, as you know, it was about the decolonization process of Africa. But for the for Churchill, it was not so about Africa, but maybe about other parts of the world. In 1945, we saw at the end of World War II, and then we saw the beginning of the Cold War. So, in the context of the Cold War, I cannot say that the relationship were promising because most of the nationalist leaders in Africa, many of them were either close to the Soviet Union or they were claiming socialism. That therefore they became the targets of Western imperialism. And then, well, we have leaders like Kwame Nkrumah, who was going to be overthrown on February 24, 1966. And then many others with the support of the CIA, as Nkrumah was seen as close to the Soviet Union, or as Nkrumah was seen as somebody who was awakening the African people. The same thing with Patrice Lumumba, who was going to be eliminated physically with the support of the Soviet Union, with the support of the United States, and with the involvement of Belgium. So I don't see when America has tried to do something promising for Africa, because the United States has been always pursuing its agenda, and which is rooted in American imperialism. So if there is anything that I miss, maybe Stefanie can help me and then think about that.
Yeah, I think you captured it well. So basically, the U.S. was always and has always been on the imperialist camp. And yes, in fact,
and then one thing I was going to forget is that even the apartheid system, which was enforced, which became the law of the land in South Africa in 1948, and we know the role that the United States played, and then to maintain blacks are like in a situation of bondage for decades. And so it is the Soviet Union a little bit, or more Cuba, and then Libya later on. They were the ones who were on the right side of history and fighting against apartheid. And then we know the role that Cuba played in Angola. But later on, even when Reagan was the president, it was the international pressure and then the internal pressure coming from some blacks and many other leaders. This is how Reagan thought about working towards the dismantling and the later on, you know, of apartheid, and later on George W. Bush, George Bush like the father. So yes, the U.S. has always been on the side of oppression when it comes to Africa.
All right, so let me turn back to you now, Sifelani Tsiko. Basically the same question as Dr. Lagoke has walked us through some of the history, which has found the U.S. consistently on the wrong side when it comes to Africa. And he ended on the note by reminding us that it was the U.S. that helped to maintain the apartheid regime, which was so destructive, not only to Africans in South Africa, but to the neighboring countries. You recall all the destabilizing campaigns, the military attacks by the apartheid regime, which was destructive to so many African countries. So why don't you pick up on that note? Was there ever a time when the possibilities could have been better in terms of U.S.-Africa relations?
I think my good brother has put it very clearly that the U.S. Has been on the wrong side of our history. And this is why even former liberation movements that still active within our region, the ANC, ZANU-PF in Zimbabwe, you look at Frelimo in Mozambique, even the MPLA in Angola, they are still, when it comes to their relations with the U.S., they are still cautious. They know that you have to keep more like an arm's length kind of policy. Because of the history, we still remember millions of people that were displaced during the Renamo rebel attacks in Mozambique, when Afonso Dhlakama was backed by South Africa and the U.S. The support of the U.S. For the rebel movement UNITA in Angola is still fresh in our minds. In South Africa, at a time when all other countries were rallying against the apartheid system, the U.S. and other Western countries were the ones that propped up the apartheid regime. All this is still fresh in the minds of many people were still conscious about the role of countries like Cuba, China, the former Soviet Union. They're still alive to all this history. So what we have, like for Zimbabwe, this the destabilizing effect of the Renamo movement is still being felt up to now. We still have landmines that are dotted, scattered along our border with Mozambique and the northern part. Even if you look at our own history as Zimbabwe, when our liberation movement, ZANU and ZAP, were fighting against the EN regime, government, there was a lot of support that was coming from the Americans and the British behind the scene. So what they would do on the global arena, they would appear as if they were supporting our liberation movement, and behind the scene, the ones that were propping up the Ian Smith regime. So you had like the biological weapons that were used against most of our people here in Zimbabwe, the impact is still there to see. You look at South Africa, the impact of what the U.S. did in the townships is still being felt even up to now. You look at what UNITA did in Angola, the impact is still being felt even up to now. So people here in Southern Africa and most other parts haven't forgotten what the Americans have been doing. You look at the DRC, the conflict that is ongoing there in the eastern part. These are some of the issues that are still alive within the region. You would also want to look in West Africa, most part of the of our continent. You still have these memories of bad American foreign policy. You look at the case of Libya, like my brother said, the impact right now, you can't unite the Libyans again to coexist with one another. But even if Donald Trump was saying that they were pulling out, things like that, but the impact that remains is enduring and lasting. So these are some of the things that when we are interacting with the U.S. in terms of their foreign policy, Africans remain alive to what has happened in the past, in the 60s, what they did to Kwame Nkrumah, we're still alive. What they did to Lumumba, we're still alive to it. So there's so many things that remain a pain in our hearts that we cannot easily forget. And so when you're dealing with American police, it's like you're dining with the devil, so you have to use a long spoon. Eh? This is what I can say for now.
Okay, so while I still have you, why don't we take up the issue of sanctions on Zimbabwe? The sanctions, of course, were implemented, what is it now, 20, going on 20 years after Zimbabwe had the land reform. And basically, the land was taken from the European minority elite whose ancestors had stolen it from Africans in the first place and returned to Africans in Zimbabwe. As a result, Zimbabwe was punished by the United States and the EU with sanctions. President Robert Mugabe is no longer with us. He has passed on. Those sanctions are still in place. What is Zimbabwe saying to that? And I know recently there's been some effort by the SADC, the SADC countries, the Southern African Development Cooperation countries, to have these sanctions lifted. What can you say?
I think the major issue when it comes to sanctions, our governments and political analysts are quite unanimous that American policy rarely changes by that much, even if you have a Democrat administration in place. So what you realize is that the much as we might say that the Zimbabwean government has been somewhat, it gave a cautious welcome to the Biden victory, so they just remain hopeful that maybe sanctions might be lifted, but deep inside, knowing the U.S. That they've dealt with, because most of the comrades within ZANU-PF have been in the struggle since the 60s, so they have an in-depth understanding of American foreign policy that Even if you try and reach out, like President Emmerson Mnangagwa is promoting what he's calling the re-engagement policy, where he's trying to reach out to the U.S. And other European countries. But prospects that sanctions will be lifted are still not bright for now. And what they have is just hope, because on foreign policy, we know that Americans are united when it comes to their foreign interest. But on domestic issues, we know that you can have differences. But what we just hope is that probably the Biden administration might handle it differently, but without necessarily removing the sanctions against Zimbabwe. But what we know is that we have to, it's like, when you dine with the devil, you have to use a long spoon. You have to keep your distance, knowing very well what American foreign policy can do to us. But the issue is that sanctions, the impact of sanctions has been devastating for most economic sectors of the country. But and then this has put Zimbabwe on a survival mode. So to some extent, it has strengthened the resolve that when it comes to farming, we really have to be productive as blacks, and we really have to be aggressive in terms of opening up relations with countries that are keen to have normal relations with Zimbabwe. So these are some of the aspects that I think we remain alive to. So most of the liberation movements, ANC, you look at even the MPLA in Mozambique, the Frelimo in Mozambique, and Chama Chama Pinduzi in Tanzania. All these parties, they remain. They've been calling for the lifting of sanctions, and they understand the history of Southern Africa liberation politics in relation to American foreign policy. So the issue now for the Biden administration is, how are they going to recalibrate their foreign policy in terms of the relations with Southern Africa? Because politics, as you know, international relations has been very dynamic. And what you're seeing the Russians getting aggressive in terms of trade relations with countries like Zimbabwe and most others in Southern Africa. China is already the number one country that is moving in aggressively in terms of its relations with most Southern Africa and African countries. So even if the Americans continue with their sanctions and probably with their stringent kind of relations with Africa, the world doesn't stop. Turkey is coming in a big way. Russians are coming in a big way. China is coming in a big way. Malaysia, Thailand, you have a whole lot of these countries that are ready to take up opportunities in Africa. And also Africans are also seeing that the world doesn't stop with America. You can relate with other countries and life has to go on. For instance, Zimbabwe has struck numerous deals with Belarus. So whereby the government has received huge amounts of agricultural equipment from Belarus. Whilst the Americans are hanging on to their sanctions issue. So for Zimbabweans, life doesn't stop. Even if we are under sanctions, they control most of the financial global financial institutions.
Right, right.
But things don't stop there. The country has to survive. Land is there, and we're seeing so many success stories among black farmers who are successfully producing crops, livestock, and a whole lot of other products, despite the narrative that is being sold that we are not, black farmers are not productive, you know, land is lying idle. There's that narrative that is being peddled. Right. And also we are seeing also a number of white farmers entering into partnerships with blacks, coming back to enter into partnerships and trying to see how they can improve the agricultural sector. So all these aspects should inform America that the politics in Southern Africa, the politics of Africa is dynamic, it's moving.
Okay, so let's go back to Dr. Lagoke. Dr. Lagoke, you can pick up on any of the points that Sifelani Tsiko brought up that you want to amplify if you wish. But my question to you is, at the end of the day, the intervention in Libya, for example, the NATO war, the Western war that destroyed Libya, was that not the best manifestation of Africa's impotence, Africa's inability to defend the continent, to defend itself? That's one part of the question. Then the other part of the question is, the West used to have an imperialist agenda in China as well, and very destructive toward China. But China took hold of its own affairs after the revolution. And today, China is a global power. At the end of the day, is it not up to Africa to do something which would allow Africa to seize its own destiny, just like China did?
Yeah, Milton, I think that starting from today, I will invite myself on your shows now. I'm telling you, you ask me questions that people usually do not ask me during my shows, and I can tell you, your questions are very, very profound. And I'm being honest. I know you have your newspaper. I commend you for that. But what I'm hearing today, it is amazing. I want to commend you for the way you are conducting the interview, and then the way you are, you know, the question that you are asking.
Thank you.
So the first thing I want to say, you know, just to say one thing about what Sifelani has said, is that when it comes to the, you know, the lifting of the sanctions, same thing I will say about Ivory Coast in a few. It's not just it should not be a Zimbabwean issue. It should not be just for Zimbabweans or people in the southern part of Africa. It is an African issue. It is a Pan-Africanist issue. Yes. And that's why we need to join hands, you know, for the lifting of the sanctions against Zimbabwe. The same way a Pan-Africanist, an internationalist across the globe are fighting, you know, to end the embargo against Cuba. We need to do the same thing with Zimbabwe. That's the only thing I'm going to add to the beautiful development that the brother Sifelani has given, you know, to us when you're asking that question. Now, coming to what happened to Libya, yes, everything that is happening in Africa, the increase of the military bases, the fact that those African regional organizations are at the mercy of the Western world, and then the involvement, the imperialistic agenda of the West in Libya, and what they're doing in Zimbabwe, and what France has done in Ivory Coast, when under the leadership of Sarkozy, they went and then they bombed the former president Gbagbo, sided with the rebels. Yes, all the things are a reflection of the impotence of Africa. It is because of the weakness of the continent of Africa, and because Africa is in a weak position. So not to go too far, that would be my answer to that question. Now, yes, I hear that often. When people say, you know, Africa is not the only continent that has experienced oppression, many parts of the world have experienced oppression. Yes, people say all those things. But the reality is that the situation of Africa is unique. We have been under the oppression of the Europeans for 600 years.
Yes.
When it started with the Battle of Ceuta in 1415, after which Henry the Navigator undertook that age of exploration in the age of during the European Renaissance that led eventually to slavery, which lasted for 400 years. The enslavement of blacks. But people have not even recovered from slavery. Then the European decided to come, to go, and then this time they came with colonialism. And then it was, that system that they put into place. Several generations of Africans, they have to fight. And then when we thought that we were going to be independent, and now they came with neocolonialism. Right. That is the state in which Africa is. China has not experienced that.
True.
So, and people have to know that when they think about when they want to compare China to Africa. Now, another thing is that in Asia, particularly in China, people were particularly attached to their cultures, be it Confucianism, be it that Chinese collectivism. And then the pride that they had, like in the culture which was enforced for millennia, all those elements put into place, and also the level of development that Asia had at that time that Africa did not have when the European came. That's why it is so difficult for us, you know, to recover. But we are hopeful. And then, as King said, that the arc of the universe is long, but it always bends towards justice. And then in the history of Africa, we've seen several people, Asantua, and then Kimpa Vita, Queen Nzinga, Samori Touré, Amadou Sekou, and then Sekou Touré, Kwame Nkrumah, Félix Houphouët-Boigny, Patrice Lumumba, and then Gaddafi, and many others. So we will continue, we will have several generations, and eventually, we will gain more freedom. That's why today in the 21st century, be under with Donald Trump or with Joe Biden or with Obama, Africans have to wake up. And then if something is happening in a part of Africa, it should not be the issue of that particular region, but it should be the issue of the entire continent of Africa. That's why we need to join hands and fight together and promote Pan-Africanism, which is supposed to be the political religion of Africans and the people of African descent.
Well, on that note, gentlemen, we're actually out of time. While I still have you, Professor Naka, please, people that would like to continue the conversation with you, how can they get in touch with you?
Oh, okay. So I think we were supposed to forget that on the 21st of November, we successfully launched our new movement, the Convention for Pan-Africanism and Progress, CPP, which has the same acronym as Kwame Nkrumah's political party, as we are claiming Pan-Africanism and claiming Kwame Nkrumah, and then we are claiming the original vision of Kwame Nkrumah's CPP that we are adapting to the realities and then exigencies of the 21st century. So on Facebook, when you type Convention for Pan-Africanism and Progress, people can find me on my email, glagoke@gmail.com, at hotmail.com, or nyakalagoke@gmail.com. Thank you so much, Milton, for the opportunity.
And that's, for listeners, that's GNAKALAGOKE@gmail.com, correct?
Yes. Thank you very much, yes.
The same thing for you, Sifelani Siko, if somebody wants to continue conversation with you, how can they get in touch with you?
Thank you, my brother. On my they can get in touch on my email, sifelani11@gmail.com, and I'm also on Facebook.
And for listeners, it is SIFELANITSIKO and then 11@gmail.com. Gentlemen, thank you so much for your time. We will have you back on the show in a few weeks. Listeners, you can follow me at Ali Mahdi on Twitter. And please also go to blackstarnews.com. That's all the time we have. Stay strong. Stay Pan-African. See you again soon.
For WPFW in Washington and WBAI in New York, I'm Amara Evering with some brief news headlines. Maryland Governor Larry Hogan wrote a letter to Joe Biden's transition team on Monday, saying another federal stimulus package is the state's top priority. Hogan said state and local governments, as well as small businesses, need more money soon, saying, quote, states are already fighting an uphill battle to rebuild our economies and maintain services. Without federal assistance, we could be forced to consider furloughs and job cuts, halts to construction, reductions in government services, and other measures that will cause an increase in unemployment and further delay the economic recovery. In Washington, D.C., 133 new coronavirus cases have been reported, for a total of over 21,600 confirmed total cases. D.C. reported 5 new COVID-19-related deaths, bringing total fatalities to 685. Mayor Muriel Bowser says she expects a rise in cases over the coming weeks. D.C. reported 371 new cases on Saturday, the district's highest single-day count since the start of the pandemic. Maryland reported 2,765 new cases, for a total of over 201,000 cases. Over 7% of coronavirus tests in the state are positive. Maryland reported 30 new confirmed COVID-19-related deaths, bringing fatalities to a total of 4,516. Maryland officials said a child under the age of 9 died of coronavirus on Sunday. Coronavirus has infected over 13.6 million and killed over 268,000 people in the United States alone, according to data compiled by Johns Hopkins University. Globally, there have been over 63.5 million confirmed coronavirus cases and over 1.4 million deaths. On Monday, over 157,000 new coronavirus cases were reported, as well as 1,172 new deaths. Hospitals reached a record high of 96,000. Dr. Anthony Fauci is warning that travel over the Thanksgiving holiday could make the current surge in COVID-19 cases even worse in the coming weeks. Today, Iran's parliament approved a bill to stop nuclear inspections. This bill would suspend UN inspections of Iran's nuclear facilities and require the government to boost its uranium enrichment if European signatories do not provide relief from oil and banking sanctions. The parliament speaker, Mohammed Bakir Ghalibaf, said that lawmakers were, quote, hopeful to remove sanctions through this stern decision. European countries took issue with sanctions slapped on Iran's banking sector by Trump in late October, Reuters reports. Germany, France, and Britain had urged the Trump White House to reconsider the sanctions, saying they would deter legitimate trade and harm Western interests. Germany went as far as to keep a multi-billion euro arrangement with Iranian banks, including two that faced U.S. sanctions. In a joint letter, diplomats of three European countries wrote that sanctions could make food and medicine, quote, prohibitively expensive for many Iranians in the middle of the pandemic. Christopher Krebs, the former director of the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, suggested today that he will pursue legal action against Trump campaign lawyer Joe DiGenova for remarking that Krebs should be, quote, taken out at dawn and shot. Krebs was ousted as the Trump administration's cybersecurity chief last month when he said that this year's presidential election was, quote, the most secure in history. Election officials in Georgia have launched investigations in progressive groups who are registering new voters ahead of state-run elections in January. Republican Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger said his office was looking into registration